Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and New Jersey State Senator Tom Kaine Jr., the Republican leader in the Senate, joins us from the convention now to preview Governor Christie's speech tonight and a few more things. Hi, Senator. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
So the governor's keynote speech is obviously going to be a big moment. I can guess at some of the things he'll say about President Obama. What do you think he's going to say about New Jersey?
Well, I think he's obviously going to have a contrast with President Obama, but I think he's going to talk about a great deal of success in New Jersey. Huge private sector job creation, changes in tenure reform, public pension benefits changes, health benefits changes. And he's going to talk about, the extraordinary success that we've had in New Jersey, but show that that type of leadership, where you can work toward solutions on a bipartisan basis, as long as you have people on the other side who are willing to make compromises and work towards a positive solution, you can make a real positive change in people's lives. And I think we've seen where Governor Romney has done that throughout his entire career. He's been a success in everything that he's done. I think the governor will reemphasize that. Governor Romney's personal, his corporate, his governmental, his Olympic success. And these are all very important things for the future of both New Jersey and of America.
The governor is quoted saying he's not going to use the term he often does, the New Jersey comeback. Do you think New Jersey comeback would be justified for him to say? You've been promoting him just now as a success in everything he does, but all the conditions economically in New Jersey aren't necessarily so bright. 9.8 unemployment, the fourth highest in the nation, et cetera.
Mitt Romney's not from New Jersey.
I'm sorry. I mean,
the governor's going to talk about the extraordinary record of success we've had in the last couple of years. We've led the nation in so many areas, in job creation, a variety of other economic success, and major changes where we've really done great things and lower taxes on this, really the highest tax citizens in the country. And so the governor tonight will talk about that success, but the Jersey comeback is a Jersey story. Talking about Mitt Romney's national platform and the success that we need to have for the party, for both President Romney and then Vice President Ryan, that's the story, that's the keynote approach. When my father gave the keynote address in 1988, he talked about things in broader terms, not specifically in New Jersey, but used the models of success. I anticipate that this governor will use that model from 1988 to talk about the extraordinary New Jersey success story, but also how it leads lessons for a national success story.
Paul Krugman, as you probably know, probably not Governor Christie's favorite constituent in the state of New Jersey, teaches at Princeton, wrote in his New York Times column yesterday that the Christie austerity plan and tax cuts, especially for people at the top, have not produced the results in New Jersey that, say, the government auto bailout in Michigan has genuinely produced for Michigan. And he makes that contrast and says that the Christie approach is just wrong. It results in shrinkage rather than growth. How would you respond to that?
Oh, I fundamentally disagree. And I think people who are living in New Jersey have seen the success. The governor has reduced taxes on every citizen in New Jersey. He's also allowed new changes, single sales factor, which is a technical term, to allow more corporations to base their headquarters in New Jersey. He's tried to go further to reduce the tax burden on the hardworking citizens of New Jersey. Unfortunately, the Democrats in the legislature have opposed a 10% income tax decrease that he's led the way on, but I think we'll get some success. I mean, when we passed pension and health benefits reform, only a third of the Democratic caucus in the Senate and the Assembly supported that effort, but it was still nice to have a third, along with a united Republican support in the state Senate and the Assembly, under Governor Chris Christie's leadership. So I think we can have some tremendous success. We'll continue to have tremendous success. I think that while Mr. Krugman is a New Jerseyan, we're proud to have him as a citizen, as a resident, he's just fundamentally wrong.
He also argues that there's, in effect, a redistribution of wealth taking place in New Jersey under Christie toward the top, because he says while he's for the tax cuts for the wealthier New Jerseyans and rejected the idea of a temporary surcharge on million-dollar-plus incomes, that he, quote, has effectively raised taxes on lower-income workers and middle-income workers and homeowners by slashing tax credits.
That's just completely an inaccurate perception. I think the governor has tried to reduce, he certainly has blocked tax increases, income and otherwise, on the citizens of New Jersey, and that's the right thing to do. But I think Mr. Krugman looks at everything as a zero-sum gain, and that's, I think, the wrong way to approach the way government policy. We need to focus on ways to create innovation, entrepreneurship, making sure that more people come to New Jersey, whether it's Princeton or any other great institutions we have in the state of New Jersey, for higher education. And these are areas that we can grow opportunities. And I think that's what the governor and I and others in the legislature have been focusing on, ways to grow opportunities, make college more affordable, lower the property tax burden on hardworking citizens, make government more efficient at all levels, increase transparency. Those are leadership models that I think will show, the governor will show tonight, but also talk about, and help when President Romney takes office, where he can continue to show that type of parallel leadership.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, our guest from the Republican Convention, New Jersey State Senator Tom Kaine Jr. from Westfield and Summit and thereabouts. He's the Senate Republican leader, if you didn't know, and he's on with us talking largely about Chris Christie's keynote speech tonight. Do you think Governor Christie fits in with the mainstream conservative GOP as represented at the convention by delegates from around the country? Or do you see the governor pushing back at all on some of the far-right positions on social issues?
I think the governor's been very clear. I mean, the governor is pro-life. He has focused on making sure that everybody has a chance at creating opportunity in the state of New Jersey. And he's focused on making sure we build coalitions, build support, make real differences in people's lives. And I think he's a very important standard bearer for the Republican Party, not only in New Jersey, but nationally and internationally. Because I think people need to see, whether it's locally or abroad, that you've got strong leaders at all levels of government. And Governor Christie's led the way, and I think he has an extraordinarily important voice, an important model for the Republican Party now and in the future.
Do you think that Christie's new role and popularity nationally do anything for New Jersey? Governor Cuomo from New York said last week that it's his job to run New York, not to be working in national politics, and he's mostly staying away from the Democratic convention next week. Does this presence do anything for the state of New Jersey?
I don't think that the people at the Democratic National Convention have as good of a story to tell as the people at the Republican National Convention do. And I think that Governor Christie is reflecting that message. And I think that any time that a governor is held in high esteem and can speak on behalf of the 8.5 million people of this case, New Jersey, I think that's a good thing. And I think that Republicans and Democrats alike should praise and applaud the opportunity for a governor or a U.S. Senator or House Representative member. I mean, we don't have, only one person out of New Jersey speaking at the Democratic National Convention. It's not any of our congressmen. It's not any of our senators. But to have a national stage in which to talk about success in New Jersey, that's an important, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or unaffiliated. And I think it's a good thing that Governor Christie's got this opportunity. It's good for New Jersey.
Why do you think New Jersey isn't a swing state this year? Governor Christie got elected and is seen by, I think, a majority in New Jersey as having the tough medicine that the state needs. Why doesn't that generalize to Romney versus Obama?
Well, I think it will. I think this is the very beginning of the campaign. The Obama and his allies have spent over $125 million attacking Mitt Romney personally. And I think that Governor Christie will show, and the president will show, along with Paul Ryan, that he's got the winning message not only for New Jersey but throughout the region. And this is this is just the very beginning of the process.
You actually think Romney might carry New Jersey?
I think he's got an opportunity to do so, and he's got a great U.S. Senate candidate this year in Joe Carillo's, who's working very hard to build that. I mean, the governor's built the infrastructure in all of the 21 counties in New Jersey to have a much stronger Republican infrastructure where you can turn out voters and talk about the contrast between where the president has taken the country, and which is not in the right direction, and where President Romney is going to take this country, and show, using models that we've done very, very successfully in New Jersey. It's a very compelling story, very compelling.
Let me ask you to put on your state Senate leader hat. And talk about that Governor Christie has not announced whether he will sign up New Jersey for expanded Medicaid if the Obama health reform law stands. Washington, as you know, would pay at least 90% of the cost for the new recipients permanently under the law. What do you think the governor should do?
Well, I think the governor should say what's in the best interest of the people in New Jersey. And there are a lot of strings attached with much money from Washington. In some cases, the great concerns that it's not going to be permanent. I mean, there are very significant times where there's no such thing as a temporary tax increase. The law says
100% subsidized for the first few years and then 90% subsidized permanently after that.
I think the governor has to make the best decision for the citizens of New Jersey. When the Democratic majority tried to put through a health exchange measure, it excluded any executive branch determination on the exchanges, on the health care exchanges. And the Commissioner of Banking and Insurance wasn't allowed to be an acting supportive member of the commission determining how health insurance was going to work in the state of New Jersey. I mean, it was a complete absurdity going forward. And
I think the governor, in this area,
I think the governor's going to make the best determinations for the state of New Jersey. And
what do you think,
it up to him to make that policy.
What do you think that would be? Because certainly the administration would argue, the Obama administration, that at 90% subsidized, with hundreds of thousands of New Jerseyans who they say would be eligible, who are currently uninsured, you want to pass that up?
Well, I think the governor's got to see where the string's attached. And I think that he'll make that best determination. And, you know, it's not my place to speak in his stead. He's going to focus on what's best, not only short-term, not only the next year, two, three, press release, but what's the best, you know, 10, 20-year solution for the state of New Jersey. He's shown that in every action he's taken, in higher education reform and tax policy and in finances and in everything he's focused on. He's focused on real solutions. Health and benefits, pension reform changes take 30 years, and it's hundreds of billions of dollars savings, but it takes 30 years until true success. It's a 30-year plan, and the governor, you know, people in politics don't usually pass things that have 30 years of determination behind them to get to their final endpoint and success because of their short-term thinking. This governor has shown that he's not going to do what's good by just a press release, but what's good by a 30-year so that his kids and his kids and my grandkids can afford to live in the state of New Jersey. He's going to make those type of determinations going now and going forward.
State Senator Tom Kaine Jr. at the Republican Convention. And to finish up, going back to the speech tonight, the governor says he almost never uses text when he speaks, and he will go off teleprompter tonight if he thinks the written script is not going that well. Does that prospect make you more confident or more nervous about how this will go?
There is no better spokesperson for the ideals and the ideals of the Republican Party in New Jersey and I think nationally than Governor Chris Christie. I trust him on text and off text.
And you heard the governor say this last week, didn't you?
I don't think they have any expectation, nor have they requested, that I have a personality-ectomy, you know, between now and next Tuesday. You know, it's kind of, they know what they're buying.
So if they know what they're buying for tonight, Senator, what are they buying?
I think a happy warrior. They're buying somebody who's thrilled to have the opportunity to speak on behalf of the great people of the state of New Jersey, a person who has had true success in his own career, a person who's working with every, you know, ounce of effort to get the president and get President Romney across the finish line and show that the ideals of the Republican Party are true and strong and best represent the values of this great country.
The Senate Republican leader in the state of New Jersey from the Republican Convention on Radio Row, Tom Kaine Jr. Thank you so much for giving us this time.
Brian, thank you.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, we'll speak with Renee Amore. She's the vice chair of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. And we're going to talk about the problem that Mitt Romney is having with women in the Philadelphia suburbs. The latest polls show 60 to 30 women in America think Obama is more in touch with them. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Paul Ryan campaign last week in Chester County outside Philadelphia, one of the counties that count the most in presidential elections recently. It went 54% for Obama in 2008, 52% for Bush in 2004. With me now is Renee Amore, deputy chair of the Republican State Committee in Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
For our listeners in other states, what is it about Chester County and the Philly suburbs in general that leave them so much in play in all these elections?
You know what? One, because our counties are so diverse, Brian, and people come out and vote, and folks know that. And like you just really alluded to, Chester County is like a swing county, and so are all our other counties except Philadelphia. Most of the time, Philadelphia goes Democrat, but you can always count on the other counties to really go Republican. So that's what we're excited about. That's why candidates know they have to come to the southeast area, the Bucks County, the Chester County, places like that, and they know it will make it happen.
Demographically, one of the reasons that I've read for it being such a swing county is the attitudes of suburban women in the Philly area. And the latest CNN poll released over the weekend asked women which candidate was more in touch with their needs. It found a 60% to 30% advantage for Obama, 60-30. Romney can't win Pennsylvania with perceptions like that, can he?
You know what? You're absolutely right, and that's why we have to change that perception. Unfortunately, there was a congressman that made a statement that really did not help the Republican Party because people assume that, you know, perception
is... You're talking about Todd Akin in Missouri,
exactly.
Right?
You said it. I didn't say it. But bottom line is he came out with some crazy information, and people were like, oh, my God, this is how all Republicans think. And so that's why we have to change and let people know where we are, where we're coming from as far as women, because women deal with their household. Women deal with the economy. And so they want to make sure that, you know, that they have food on their table and that they can go to the grocery store and get the right thing. So we think the issues is more about economy. And so we can make that happen. We can change that perception. And Paul Ryan did that when he was in Chester County.
But if you're going to bring up Todd Akin, then are women just concerned about his statement about legitimate rape or what women's bodies can do to shut down pregnancy after they're raped? Because Paul Ryan believes in banning abortion with no exception for rape, just like Todd Akin. Is that going to cause a problem in the Philly suburbs?
Well, you know what? Again, I think that we have to come out, let people know, and Paul Ryan did that, Brian, by saying how he felt, you know, about women, what women care about and think about. And people bought into it, and they were like, okay, because they heard from the candidate. So we have to continue to get our candidates out there. Romney will be back. Paul Ryan will be back. The surrogates are out there to let people know. Yes, Paul Ryan, that's Paul's, you know, where he's at. But people will understand. But again, I don't think that's the main issue. I think that single women in particular, women in general, are really concerned about if they're going to have a job. You know, their kids just graduated. Are they going to have the right health care? You know, it's all about the health care. It's all about economy. So there's a mixture of things. But in Pennsylvania, in the southeast area outside, you know, of Philadelphia, people are thinking about jobs, 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 and the economy, where that should go. And the polling show there that that's where Governor Romney is really winning.
So people have to hear what Paul Ryan says about abortion being banned with no exception for rape, see that the Republican platform says essentially the same thing, and say, well, I just have to take on faith that they're not going to enact this, but they will enact their promises on the economy?
You know what? I think that, first of all, we all got to step out on faith, and that's number one on anything. And I think that what happens is that people will hear that, but they're still going to go with, okay, I still need to deal with my kids, the food on the table, you know, to make sure that, you know, I have a right job, to make sure that I can feel. We're losing the middle class, and that's what you have really outside in the suburban areas, the middle class, you know, in Pennsylvania, and that's an issue. And so, you know, they'll start thinking about those things too, you know, and they'll think about what you just talked about, the ban on abortions, other things like that. But because if you look at the Southeast, a lot of people are not, you know, they're not pro-choice. And so they'll go with Paul Ryan in that particular area. But they will think about the issue around rape. You know, they're not all going to agree. They're not all going to agree with, you know, where he is with that. But then there's also other issues. And they'll look at the other issues, too. I think that a lot of times, you know, people aren't just a one-issue person. You know, they deal with more issues than one. They want to look at the whole piece.
And if people are one-issue voters this year, it's jobs, jobs, jobs for the most part.
That's how I see it, Brian.
And my guest is Renee Amore, Deputy State Committee Chair for the Republicans in Pennsylvania at the Republican National Convention. So the swing voters' dilemma this year along those lines, and the polling shows it this way consistently, is that more people think Romney has better skills to improve the economy, but more people think Obama cares about them. So what do you want to see from Governor Romney on Thursday night to convince Pennsylvania swing voters that he actually does care?
That is such a good question, Brian. That's what I said to their whole campaign. He has to have come across with passion. He has to come out there being strong, being confident, letting people know, I do care about you. I understand, you know, that there's some issues. You know, I'm not just all about corporate and, you know, I'm about you, you know, individual you, where you are, where you want to go, how you're going to get there. That's how he has to express himself. Let them know he does have their passion. President Obama is an excellent speaker. It's just all about his follow through that I don't agree with, you know, and what he's doing in the economy and other things, because myself being a small business owner, it's real difficult for me under his policy. So that's the issue that I have with President Obama. I think that Romney understands business, but he got to let people know that he does care. Give some TLC, so I'm going to work with him on that.
What kind of business do you own?
I have a healthcare business.
And I read that you're a nurse and now you're a healthcare advocate. Is
Absolutely.
That accurate?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
Let me ask you a question that's totally incorrect from both sides of the aisle.
Okay, Brian.
Are Ryan Care and Obamacare kind of the same thing? That is, Ryan for seniors and Obama for younger adults, an individual mandate to go to a private market and choose an insurance plan with subsidies from the federal government.
You know what? You're right. It's almost the same.
So then what's so bad about Obamacare?
In some areas. Here's my issue. I don't want the government telling me everything. And in this administration, the government is like pushing. Tell me where to go, how to do it. I want to be able to make my own choices, do what I need to do, how I want to do it, when I want to do it. And to me, that makes a better world, okay? I think what happens in the communities is when everything is government, you know, that's what people start depending on. And they don't depend on themselves anymore, and then we all get in the same rut.
Obamacare is a private market-based plan. It doesn't even have a public option like the Ryan plan for seniors would preserve Medicare. People have to go out under this mandate if their companies don't cover them and buy insurance from private insurance companies. So what is government mandate about that?
I think it's important for people to do have the Medicare piece. I think it was a shame that Obama took $500 billion from it to pay for Obamacare, and I think that's the kind of things that people are looking at.
But that's different than saying the government is going to control your choice with respect to health care, right?
By taking out $500 billion from Medicare, you know, that's an issue for folks that have been dealing with the Medicare piece to pay for Obamacare. And so when you're swinging back and forth like that, right, that's an issue for me and for other people.
Pennsylvania is one of those states with a controversial new voter ID law. What does Pennsylvania's version do specifically that you think is important for fair elections?
You know what? I've worked the polls. I've seen when people come and they vote for people that are dead, that whole thing. I've done it in the Philadelphia area, all in the Southeast, and across the country. Bottom line, I think you need an ID to go to the bank, you know, to cash your check, to go to the hospital. So I don't see a problem with voter ID. Even the people that were suing, you know, folks, you know, Governor Corbett and all those folks are saying, okay, yeah, you are right. And now people are admitting the process wasn't as bad as they put it out to be, where the media said, oh, you can't get it if you're 90 years old, you haven't had it. It's been very simple for people to inquire. You know, one of our biggest papers has said, you know what, it's really not that bad. So I think that perception was reality, where people really just lied and exaggerated the issue. I think people will be fine, and the voter ID is right on target.
Well, I guess we'll find out in November what the actual change in turnout is as a result. But, you know, Democrats in general and blacks and Latinos in particular are furious about this, and they see it as strategic to suppress the Democratic vote because they are disproportionately likely not to have state IDs. What's your reaction to that?
You know, as an African-American, I've been black a long time. The bottom line is I don't see that being a problem. I think that the Democrats took that, used it, and ran with it. I think it's important to have an ID, to be able to vote, or to be able to do whatever you need to do to have that ID. And most people did, and I think that they kind of just raised the roof on it. And when we did a whole poll on how much and where people were, what we did was say, okay, now you don't have to pay to go through that process. So we got places all over the state that people can go in and get their ID from PennDOT, you know, which is where you get your motor vehicle information. Seniors will even provide transportation for you. So I think that, you know, we did even step up to the plate even more than we had done in the beginning. And so now people can't argue with it that much because they're doing what they need to do.
But are you creating this whole need for people to get help, to go get their IDs, et cetera, to solve a problem that doesn't exist? What's the worst case, biggest numerical case of voter identity fraud in Pennsylvania in your lifetime that you know of?
Brian, that the numbers that they gave was reported. I've been there where people didn't report it and they just went with the flow. There is voter ID out there. It may not be to the numbers that they're, you know, people are saying, you know, that it was higher, you know, and now it's lower. Bottom line, there is voter ID out there. Bottom line is I don't think we really messed up African Americans or Latinos in particular or disenfranchised them from voting. I think that the Democrats took it. They used it as an excuse so that they could make us look bad as far as Republicans and look what we're doing to these folks over here. It's so unfair, and that's their process. And you know what? In the beginning, it worked, and now even people of color are saying it really isn't that bad.
Last thing. Pennsylvania has not been getting as much publicity as a swing state lately, and the latest Philadelphia Inquirer poll has Obama up 51 to 42. What happened to this great battleground state compared to others that are turning out to be much closer this year?
You know what? I think we will get closer. I think what happened was with the governor, you know, had to go through a whole lot. People didn't like what he was doing, you know, and so because of that, and he doesn't go by polls, you know. The governor says, okay, I'm going to govern the way that I said I was going to govern, and so people are feeling, okay, if he's governing like that, how's Romney going to be? But the bottom line is that it will get closer, trust me, and people will be out there. The grassroots have been out there. They're organized. They're letting people know what's going on. The congressman that we spoke about did not help as far as the women piece. But you know what? We will make a difference, and we will be much closer.
Well, you must think it's in place since Paul Ryan showed up outside Philadelphia last
Absolutely.
Week. So, Renee Amore, Deputy Chair of the Republican State Committee in Pennsylvania, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes.
Thank you so much for having me. You take care and have a great day.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, there's a rules battle that's brewing for 2 o'clock this afternoon, the first hour of convention business, that is pitting Ron Paul delegates against the party establishment at the convention. We'll talk about that next with our reporter, Anna Sale, who's covering it in a few minutes. They want new rules, the party does, to make it harder for Ron Paul and future Ron Pauls in Republican primaries. But before we get to that, I want to give actual Mitt Romney supporters some open phones time here. This is your convention, really, but Romney just keeps getting it from all sides. Paul supporters see him as the imperious establishment. We'll be talking about that. Democrats see him as the new front man for the radical right. Independents, according to the polls, see him as skilled on the economy but not caring about them as people. So if you are enthusiastic about going to the polls on Election Day and pulling that lever or punching that card for Mitt Romney, call us and tell us why. And tell us what you would like to hear from Romney or anyone else at this convention, which officially starts in a few hours. And the real speechifying, of course, with Ann Romney and Chris Christie and others will be tonight. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You know, even David Brooks, a Romney supporter, wrote a bitingly satirical fake Romney introductory speech as his column today. And I'll read you part of this as your calls are coming in just for your amusement. But Republicans and any other likely Romney voters, let's hear from you. This is your convention. What do you want to hear Mitt Romney or any speaker say over the coming 3 nights? Call us 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. No Democratic trolls, please. Only genuine Romney supporters. What do you want to hear? And Democrats, you'll get plenty of opportunity. The convention next week and some responses as we go along this week, as we've already had, in fact. What do you want to hear at this convention? Romney supporters, why do you feel represented by Mitt Romney? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And as your calls are coming in, a little bit of Mitt Romney's introduction speech as written by David Brooks. The purpose of the Republican convention is to introduce America to the real Mitt Romney. Fortunately, I have spent hours researching this subject. I can provide you with a definitive biography and a unique look into the Byronic soul of the Republican nominee. Mitt Romney was born on March 12, 1947, in Ohio, Florida, Michigan, Virginia, and several other swing states. He emerged hair first, believing in America, and especially its national parks. He was given the name Mitt after the Roman god of mutual funds and launched into the world with the lofty expectation that he would someday become the Arrow Shirt Man. Romney was a precocious and gifted child. He uttered his first words, "I like to fire people," at age 14 months, made his first gaffe at 15 months, and purchased his first nursery school at 24 months. The school, highly leveraged, went under, but Romney made 24 million jujubes on the deal. Mitt grew up in a modest family. His father had an auto body shop called the American Motors Corporation, and his mother owned a small piece of land, Brazil. He had several boyhood friends, many of whom owned NASCAR franchises, and excelled at school, where his fourth grade project, Inspiring Actuaries I Have Known, was widely admired. So David Brooks goes on, and he concludes it like this. After his governorship, Romney suffered through a midlife crisis, during which he became a social conservative. This prepared the way for his presidential run. He barely won the 2012 Republican primaries after a grueling nine-month campaign, running unopposed. At the convention, where his Secret Service nickname is Mannequin, Romney will talk about his real-life record. Successful business leader, superb family man, effective governor, devoted community leader, and prudent decision maker. If elected, he promises to bring all Americans together and make them feel inferior. So Mitt Romney's introduction speech, or part of it, as written by David Brooks, as David Brooks' column in the New York Times today. But Republicans and likely Romney voters, let's hear from you. He's getting it from all sides, even somebody like David Brooks, who's going to vote for the guy, by all indications. This is your convention. What do you want to hear Mitt Romney or any speaker say over the coming three nights? 212-433-WNYC, and we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now it's calls from Mitt Romney enthusiasts, beginning with Manny in Bergen County. Manny, thanks so much for calling in. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
I'm actually very happily pulled over for Mitt Romney. I was an Obama supporter. I thought our country was in a position where we needed somebody like him. I believed a lot of what he said, and I feel he hasn't delivered anything of what he said. He's been an academic in academia and a professional politician all his life. He has no real life experience, unlike Romney, who does have business experience. He was an executive, so he ran a state. He ran several companies. I think we stand a much better chance at fixing the mess, economic mess we're in, with somebody with Romney's experience, who's actually has done economic success stories, or has had economic success stories, unlike Obama.
Manny, thank you so much for starting us off. Very specific. Tim in Hillsborough, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good morning. I'd just like to see someone in Washington, be it a Republican or a Democrat, and I guess it's not going to be a Democrat because they're so built in on these government programs. We have to address Social Security, and we have to address Medicare. And if we don't do that in 20 years, both of these programs are going to cost us so much money in the long run that it won't be effective for us to even operate them. So, I mean, we need to look at all these entitlements that I guess these Democrats, you know, started Social Security back in the 30s, and now it's just turned into a free lunch for everybody. You know, the Social Security was supposed to be for retirement, but not only is it for retirement now, but, you know, people get it for SSI. People get it for all kinds of entitlements, and it's gotten out of control. We need to correct those two problems. Otherwise, we won't have any money left to do anything else.
Any speech you're looking forward to particularly?
Well, I'd like to see Romney become less more plastic. And what I mean by that is that he needs to get down and be more likable. He has the programs that I think are going to work better than what the Democrats are initiating, and I think that's what he has to do. I'm not that happy with Romney, but I have no time for Obama.
Are you against SSI, by the way, Social Security disability and things like that?
Yeah, I am. I don't think that's what the true idea of Social Security was for. When the Democrats started it in the 30s, it was for retirement purposes. And let's face it, when it started in the 30s, most people weren't going to reach the age of 65 because they were dying before that. It was basically a tax, and that's all it was. But now we're living much longer, and people who have paid into Social Security in the 40s and 50s have reaped 20 times what they've paid into it. Which is okay, but we cannot be having all these other entitlements come out of Social Security. That's why it's broke.
Tim, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Toby in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Toby.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I want to say one or two things. Regardless of who's president, the decision-making will always be difficult in this day and age or in later days of age or in times past. However, I am... want to see an inspirational president who wants to inspire people like myself to create, not give out big subsidies for the innovations of hundreds of millions, but have a person who says, you know what, it feels good, I'm going to say, listen, I support that idea. I don't want to hear bad, negative defining moments saying like that. Rich people or people who want to be rich are bad. They're actually decent people. And if they're not decent people, where is this country headed? I mean, I want to see a president who not only inspires me like I've been inspired in the past to create jobs, or I've worked for other people who inspire me to make a living for my family without asking for a handout. That's the type of president I want to see. And I want to see a president who will say, listen, it's all really in your hands just as much as it If you fall, okay, there's such a thing as Social Security, there's such a thing as unemployment, there's such a thing as welfare, and there's such a thing as Medicaid. But that should not be the inspiring idea.
Thank you, Toby. I'm going to go and get some other folks on. Thank you. I appreciate your call. Call us again. Charles in the Flatiron District. Hi, Charles.
Hello, Mr. Lair. How are you?
Okay, call me Brian.
Brian, good. Yeah, I support Mitt Romney simply because he's a man, I believe, of principle and integrity, and I don't think he wants to have class warfare as President Obama is. And I enthusiastically, I can't support him in anything. I'm not a social conservative, but I'm a fiscal conservative. And I definitely believe that Romney is doing that. And I think Obama strictly is a man who has give us class warfare, class against class, and distinction. And there's no problem with Mr.
Now,
Romney.
The Democrats say it's the rich who've launched the class warfare. Warren Buffett says that.
Well,
and you can
Buffett
see the results because there's so much more concentration of wealth at the top than there used to be.
Yeah, Mr. Lair, Warren Buffett is the favorite sort of businessman of the Democrats. Just like you quoted Mr. Brooks, he's the favorite conservative of Democrats. I don't think that's true. I think that there's always been the rich, there's always been the poor. There's the middle class people like myself who have to be helped. And I think that Romney will do that. I think Obama's talked about it. But if he was anyone else, would people be voting for him based on the economics? I don't think so. I think he could never win an election if it wasn't for the social, class distinctions which he's trying to bring forth. That's what the Democrats are running on. They can't run on the economy.
Any particular speech you're looking forward to the most?
I'm just looking to Mr. Romney just laying out his platform. I think he is a human being. I think people want to make him a plastic Mormon who has no relation to people, but I don't believe that's true. And I wonder if George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, or President Roosevelt really cared about people as we want them to care about in the 21st century. Different times.
Charles, thank you for your call, and I appreciate all of you who called in as Mitt Romney supporters. We'll keep taking your calls through the convention week. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And with us now, it's a free country political reporter, Anna Sale, who spent yesterday talking to delegates who had a little time on their hands, thanks to Isaac, to talk about some of those delegates' thoughts and why the convention at 2 o'clock today may kick off in its very first hour with a rules battle between the party and Ron Paul supporters. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Brian.
So overall, what kind of mood have you been finding among the delegates?
You know, it was a little, you know, people who were excited to be here, but nobody seemed all that fired up for Mitt Romney. The kind of intense party loyalists talked about liking being here with the history and their faith in the Republican Party. The Ron Paul supporters had their complaints, of course, but I haven't come across delegates who are just pumped to be here to support Mitt Romney.
As it turns out, yesterday, talking to delegates meant talking to a number of Ron Paul supporters who have been making their presence felt. Why, again, are they out in force?
That's right. Well, it's pretty complicated. And the reason I was talking to Ron Paul supporters, I'm focusing on swing state delegations. Both Iowa and Colorado have a big contingent of Ron Paul delegates in their delegations. So just to review, here's how it happened in Iowa. Remember, we spent all this time covering the caucus, who was going to win. But the caucus results actually didn't prescribe who the Iowa delegates would be. Basically what happened, Ron Paul supporters outmaneuvered other Romney supporters at the state level this summer, and they represent 23 out of 28 delegates here, Ron Paul supporters for the state of Iowa.
Mm. Amazing. And so you spoke with Delegate at Large from Iowa, David Fisher, about party unity, and here's what he said.
I would say going into this fall, Mitt Romney certainly has an opportunity to earn my support. I believe he has an opportunity to earn the support of the vast majority of Ron Paul's supporters. But we're listening. And it's important that we hear some messages that are welcoming to us and the issues that are important to us. And we'll be paying a lot of attention.
So a Ron Paul supporter, delegate at convention, not quite enthusiastic. Doesn't even sound like he's convinced yet that he's going to vote for Romney.
And he said he's going to be listening. He might also be shouting later this afternoon, depending on what happens on the convention floor.
We have a few minutes, Ron Paul supporters. This is your moment. It's going to be your moment in Tampa. It's going to be your moment here. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So this rules change that would have prevented them from being seated, I guess they want to put this in place for future primary years so that there are fewer, upstart delegates?
Exactly. So the basic question is, you know, what's more democratic, to go by the state party rules or to go by the results at the polls? What the Democratic Party says is for any candidate who wins more than 15% in a primary or caucus, they get proportionally those numbers of delegates at the national convention. That's the Democrats' rules. The Republican proposed rules would get that more in line with what the Democrats say. It would bind the delegates to the results of the caucus and primaries. The Ron Paul supporters, who figured out ways to organize at the local level and up their number of delegates, don't like that change. They say it shuts out the grassroots, and they say it could be a damaging blow to the energy of Ron Paul supporters. They're using words like big tent. They're saying things like that Ron Paul supporters is where the youth is. That's the future of the party. And if you make this rules change, you're going to alienate these folks from the party.
But what's their argument in terms of clean democracy, good elections, if in states like Maine and Minnesota, for example, Paul lost the caucuses but winds up with most of the delegates?
Well, what they're focusing on in terms of fairness is there's two things. So there's the rule change for 2016, 4 years from now, and then there's also the issue of the Maine delegates, that their delegation makeup was changed last week by National Republicans to make it Romney majority as opposed to Ron Paul majority. And they see that as sort of undemocratic. That's what they're pointing to as unfair. They're saying Ron Paul supporters follow the rules in Maine and are being punished by the National Republicans. So that's what they're pointing to in terms of an undemocratic process.
Remember in 2008, people were worried on the Democratic side that Hillary Clinton supporters would sit on their hands on Election Day in November and cost Obama the race. Obviously, that didn't come to pass. But are they genuinely concerned that Ron Paul supporters will be less cooperative this year and there may be enough of them in a couple of swing states to make the difference?
Well, I think the primary concern today is, you know, having a ruckus in front of the cameras and that sort of thing. Nope, even Ron Paul supporters are saying we are in no way think that we have any shot at the nomination here. So it's more about kind of the appearances here at the Republican convention. But, you know, in a state like Iowa, where Ron Paul got 20% of the caucus, you know, he came in third behind Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. It's in a very important swing state. And when you have the state party chairman now is a former co-chairman of the Ron Paul campaign in the state. And so if these kind of party leaders who are Paul people go back to Iowa feeling shut out by the national party, that's energy you want to have in a close battleground state to make sure they are putting out all their energy for Mitt Romney. So I think it's more an energy question than a math question.
Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ron Paul supporter?
Yes, sir.
And
I just wanted to say that Ron Paul is really the only one bringing me into the Republican Party. I'm 22 years old. I have several other friends of mine that are very young that the only thing tying them to the Republican Party is Ron Paul.
Which is your big Ron Paul issue? Is it his libertarian economics? Is it his laissez-faire policy on drug laws? Is it his foreign policy, small military? Any particular aspect of it that you're most into?
Well, personally, I'm more into his foreign policy, especially, and his drug policy. I mean, what he says makes sense, and what we've been doing the last 50 years for drug policy and foreign policy really hasn't been giving us the type of results.
Will you vote for Romney?
No.
Peter, thank you. You know, there is a Libertarian Party candidate, former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. Of course, Ron Paul is a Libertarian. He was once the Libertarian Party candidate for president himself. Are you hearing any rumblings that any of these Ron Paul delegates might end up backing Gary Johnson?
You know, at this point, they're not really saying. I talked to the wife of a Colorado delegate who's supporting Ron Paul, and she said she can't imagine voting for President Obama. She can't imagine voting for Mitt Romney at this stage, so she might just not vote. But no, Gary Johnson isn't really coming up. It's sort of like she told me, I might just write in Ron Paul. So, you know, one thing Ron Paul supporters have is message discipline and loyalty.
Well, here's one more clip that you got from Iowa Delegate David Fisher supporting Paul on where there might be common ground with Romney.
It all boils down to freedom, is the bottom line. Freedom is the message that brings all these people together from such a wide diversity of lifestyles and opinions. And that's really the bottom line that we're about. It's the message of freedom and how that unites us. We don't have to agree on everything. We must agree that we should all be free. We should be willing to mind our own business. We should be respectful of one another. And then we can identify some things we have in common that we can maybe build some relationships on.
Anna, everybody talks about freedom and everybody has their own definition of it, huh?
Exactly. So they can all get around freedom, then they'll figure out the details later. But that sounded very diplomatic. I'm interested to see if it feels that way later this afternoon.
You know, the New York Times lead angle today is dissent bubbling up yesterday in the void of the canceled activities, with Paul delegates arguing that their candidate is being silenced. Also, Todd Akin supporters complaining about being abandoned by the party, and some kind of compromise between Romney and other conservative activists on some particular things. Are you seeing those tensions?
I was hanging out with the Ron Paul folks mostly, and I actually was with them when they noticed that New York Times article, and they sort of gave each other a thumbs up, because at one point they got up on the stage where there was a banner that said, "We can do better," and they held up their Ron Paul sign, so it said, "Ron Paul can do better." So they used their free time to take that little protest in the convention center area, and they were glad it got some attention because there wasn't a lot else going on.
All right. We leave it there with It's a Free Country political reporter Anna Sale. You can see her stuff at itsafreecountry.org, our politics website. Anna, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Anna will be one of our guests tonight on our 7 o'clock convention night call-in. We'll be doing these every convention night, tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights next week during the Democratic Convention. And I think you'll really enjoy these. We put together a network of public radio stations from almost all the swing states. And so we'll take calls from the tri-state and the swing states and have some great guests. That's our 7 o'clock convention night call-ins for our states and the swing states, 7 p.m. beginning tonight. Talk to you then. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.